John.
I'm Mike.
And I... What? That's one for the blooper reel.
Yes.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We've no idea who we are, but yes, we are recording you a podcast that is mostly music-based, although there is some good, honest-to-goodness chuntering.
There is.
Which we're going to be starting off a bit of right now.
Yes.
On this episode where I do believe we're going to be listening to a bit of the old Bob Dylan.
Yes.
It's part of the Rolling Stone Top 100 albums ever. But we're picking out the ones that we've never listened to. And yeah, there's a lot of Bob Dylan that we've never listened to.
Yeah, we've done two episodes so far. One that we liked, one that we weren't so keen on.
So let's see how we feel about Dylan. But we'll talk about that
later.
And much like Jules Holland.
Yes.
But right now, let's do our traditional little bit of...
Gubbins!
...chunnering about something unrelated.
Yes.
And today, I've seen a lot of talk on little bits of tech news and on my own Facebook feed...
Yes.
...regarding the release of Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
Which, frankly, fascinating augmented reality game where you actually find Pokemon... In the great wide real world out there, I just love the concept of it.
Is it via a handheld game system, or is it just via your phone?
It's a phone. As far as I understand, I mean, I've not looked into actually getting it myself. Apparently, officially, the UK isn't getting it for a bit yet because they're having some server problems. But some people are fudging it slightly.
I have been seeing one or two fudged ones where people have somehow got it.
Which we at AYP Podcast do not recommend doing.
No.
Because apparently you might actually get yourself banned from the official product if you start trying to fudge it right now.
When it's released. Oh.
Mm. So yeah. Might not be worth trying to get on board too early.
Well, but we at all yesterday's parties would never condone piracy in any form anyway.
Unless it's actual piracy. You know, on the...
If you've got access to a boat.
Yeah, just go for it.
Yeah.
You know... But like old school piracy, not like the Somalian version, you know.
No.
We're talking about bottles of rum and eye patches and peg legs and all
that. Tricornered hats.
Oh, definitely tricornered hats. Yeah. Who doesn't look brilliant in one of those? Van Morrison probably
doesn't.
Yeah.
And he'd only limit his pirating skirmishes to like 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he'd just stop and
detune a guitar and get some kind of extraneous floating on something. We're still bitter, frankly.
After listening to
Astral Weeks, we're still bitter about that.
Yeah.
What an awful album. That's... Anyway.
Pokemon Go.
Pokemon Go, yeah. A lot of unusual things have been happening. Because I've, much like you probably have, you know, people listening at home, you've probably got friends who don't live in the same country as you. Because we're a wonderful global community these days, thanks to the interwebs.
Yes.
And I've got mates out there in the Americas. You know, the former colonies.
Yeah.
The former colonies, yes.
Oh! I've got loads of friends that used to be friends when I was a thing. But no! Oh, wee jobby.
Anyway, yeah. Former colonies.
Yes.
The Americas. But yeah. Some very, very peculiar behaviour has been starting up in and around Pokemon Go. There's already been reports of a lot of injuries, apparently. People taken to A&E for just wandering into the road, chasing a Pidgey or whatever.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of reports of that. There was that one that has already become quite famous of a fella trying to catch a Pokemon whilst his wife was in labour.
Oh, God.
She was... The picture there of her, lying there, knees up, in the midst of what I assume was a contraction. And he's... I think it was... In fact, a Pidgey was that right there at the foot of her bed, and he's there trying to catch it. You can imagine how happy she was about that.
I imagine. Well, I've already just seen a headline here that says, a 19-year-old found a dead body while playing Pokemon Go.
See? Pokemon, you know, it's
helping cover crime.
Exactly. Already it's providing a public service. And apparently people are meeting each other under the most peculiar circumstances and making friends.
Really?
Because there was one little thing on Reddit of a fellow who was having trouble sleeping, decided to do a bit of Pokemon Go hunting.
Yeah.
Went out and found himself in a park and bumped into a couple of what he described as sketchy characters. who came over and pointed out that a rare Pokemon was over by a blue truck just over in the corner. He went, there it was. He caught himself a Pokemon. They were having a right good chat when the police officer turned up.
Really?
Discovered a, again from his own description, a 44-year-old white man and two 20-something black fellas. They spent some time explaining that this was not a drug deal, then explaining what Pokemon Go was, which led to the police officer downloading the Pokemon Go game, and them all agreeing to become part of the same team once they met the requisite level.
That's so lovely.
So, Pokemon Go bringing communities together.
That's actually really, really cool.
I loved that little story. Although not so much the assumption that two 20-something black guys were selling drugs. But the fact that they all came together as friends at the end of it.
That's amazing. Man.
There's been a lot of peculiar things going on in and around. Apparently, they like to hang out in toilets.
Really?
The real world Pokemon. There's been a lot of discoveries in public facilities. They mean they're kind of creeping under the door. There's several instances of a Diglett actually coming out of a toilet bowl. It's quite remarkable. This kind of skeezy circumstances. And I think actually a friend of a friend was trying to go off Pokemon hunting. And apparently there was one nearby her in a what was well known as a popular dogging area.
Oh, geez.
So she thought, maybe not.
Maybe not.
Maybe I'll let that one go.
To be honest.
Maybe I don't got to catch them all.
That Pokemon will have seen too many things.
Yeah, it probably has already caught them all.
But I found an article here, actually, which is called How Long Until the First Pokemon Go-Related Death?
Not long. I mean, like I said, there's already been car accidents. There've been instances, apparently, of people trying to catch Pokemon whilst in a car, driving a car. I mean, come on now. You're not supposed to use your mobile phone, like phone calls or whatever. Do you really think you're going to be allowed to catch Pokemon whilst behind the wheel of a car?
There comes a point where you really got to have your mind on what's actually happening.
Yeah, and you're trying to catch Pokemon. Pull over and catch the Pokemon, you idiot!
But, yeah, like you say, there's in this article somebody says some poker fanatics have even left the comfort of their loved ones to run off into the night in order to catch a fleeting pocket monster.
Yes! A fleeting pocket monster.
That's quite a dubious...
We've all had one of those in the past.
But Pokeballs have reportedly been found on heavily guarded shoot-on-site military bases in Australia.
Mm.
There is even one in a gym located at the White House. The last person to jump the gate made it all the way to the front door. But can a true Pokemaster evade the Secret Service long enough to defeat the gym leader?
You know some nutter's going to try.
Oh, yeah. In fact, actually, this article I'm looking at says some people are actually Darwin Awards level stupid, and this shows somebody trying to catch a Pokemon in his car.
Whilst driving, yes. There have been instances already of that. Although another person actually found a Diglett in his own pants.
If it turned out that was just a euphemism.
Mm-hmm. Got a Diglett in my pants. And I am pleased to see you.
Wow.
I think there may be an actual increase in accidental dick pics as well.
No, babe, look. Honestly, it said to look here.
But there's a Charmander right there.
Mate, this is unsolicited.
Oh, dear me.
So, well, yeah, we look forward to the coming weeks of really bizarre Pokemon Go related stories.
This is a story that promises to do nothing but escalate.
Yes.
I mean, especially when the Europe and UK releases are officially go live.
Yeah.
It's only going to go nutty.
If you get any good stories about Pokemon Go, tweet them to us.
God,
tumble them to us.
AYP podcast. On the old Twitters.
And Tumblrs.
And the All Yesterday's Parties page on Facebook.
Yep.
Yes. Anything and everything, but especially the things we're talking about.
Yes.
Because, obviously, that's what we're interested in.
Yeah.
Because we love our own ideas.
And this is why we're talking about them.
Yeah!
Yeah! that's really tickled me, that, hasn't it?
It's rather marvellous, isn't it? But yeah, after all that ticklage, let's have a little bit of all that ticklage, all yesterday's ticklage. Let's talk about what we're actually going to be talking about in the actual podcast. The music part, the meat of the podcast.
Mm.
We're going to be doing. We've done a couple of Rolling Stone Top 100 episodes now. This one's John's choice.
Yes.
Tell us about it, John. Tell us why you picked this one.
Bob Dylan is an artist that I never really listened to all that much.
Mm. I do kind of feel that there are a lot of people say they like Bob Dylan whilst not actually listening to that much Bob Dylan.
Yeah, and my main experience with Bob Dylan is listening to Jeff Buckley cover him.
And it's funny, I think a lot of people's experiences of the Dylan are in cover versions. I mean, look at the Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's a fairly big Dylan cover.
Oddly enough, I think Jeff Buckley has also covered The Way Young Lovers Do by Van Morrison, but... I can't remember that version. Like, I can't recall it straight to hand. But Bob Dylan, to my experience so far, is an artist who is a really good songwriter, but his songs always seem to fare better when they're covered by other people.
Although, it must be said that neither one of us has ever actually listened to an entire Bob Dylan album.
No.
I think the best ofs and the just snippets of tracks here and there. I mean, that's it.
Bits and bobs.
Yes.
Bobs.
Bits and Bob Dylan's.
Bobs. Yeah.
Bobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I did there.
That's what you did there.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I've tried to listen to Bob Dylan albums whilst Mike and I used to work in a record shop, and I've tried to listen to Bob Dylan over the course of the 5 years that I was working there, but I can't recall having made it through a full album. So I will be interested to hear how this sounds. And
so what's the album we're going to be looking at, John?
But I've chosen Blood on the Tracks because, as much as anything else, one of the songs on this is a song that was covered by Jeff Buckley on the Live at Chennai album, which and that was a double album, and it was recordings of some of his solo gigs that he used to play at the Chennai Cafe, and they were very interesting recordings to listen to. One of the songs he covered was If You See Us, Say Hello, and I really, really liked his version of that, and I would be interested to hear the album that the original version is on.
That is a perfectly valid reason to check out this album.
Thank you very much.
Out of all of the available Bob Dylan albums.
Yes.
Because it's neither, I believe, I mean, I'm going from just memory, it's neither the highest rated or the lowest rated Bob Dylan album in the top 100, but it's definitely squarely in that top 100.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So yeah, we'll be giving that a go.
Yeah.
And possibly whilst eating a bit of Chinese food.
Eating a bit of food, and what will you be drinking?
Well, I was originally going to be drinking the Mocha Porter by Rogue, but... God awfulness of Van Morrison made me break into that early.
Yes.
So I'll probably actually be drinking the Brass Castle Hazelnut Mild.
Ah, okay. Last time I drank the Anning's Fruit Cider, which was the pear and mint flavour. I also now have the Crushed Mixed Berries flavour.
I've had Crushed Mixed Berries before, to be honest.
It
is. It's not comfortable.
Well, that's commuting for you.
Yeah, indeed.
So we're going to be listening to Blood on the Tracks and enjoying some savouries, and we will come back to you right after this music finishes. We're back.
Yes, we are, and we've just listened through the entirety of Blood on the Tracks.
We have
by Mr. Bob Dylan.
Oh,
and I feel like we've got opinions, John.
I feel the same.
Shall we share those opinions with the people at home?
Let's go for it.
Marvellous. Well, I have to say, as someone who's been a bit of a Dylan agnostic in the past, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed that album.
It was a very cohesive, focused album.
It really was. And one of the things, I think, that has put me off Dylan in the past, which I think is true for a lot of people, is that voice.
Yeah.
When he's got a limited range, bless his heart. But when he pushes a bit too hard to reach some notes. It grates a little.
Yes.
And there's only a couple of instances on the album where it felt that was to the detriment. There was the track Idiot Wind.
Yes.
Which is a
great
it's a great title. Yeah. I love it. The song itself was great, but his voice, it was stretching a bit.
Yes.
And it grated on the ears a bit. And you pointed out...
Tangled Up in Blue.
Yeah, that the opening track. The same, but not to the same extent.
Yeah.
It was tolerable on that track.
It's a funny thing with Dylan, because I think my opinion has always been that I think he's a great songwriter.
Mm.
I've never been a fan of his singing voice. And that bears through with listening to this. I think my opinion has largely been unchanged on that front. But the quality of the songs and the quality of the music that is supporting him is really strong, and that does help carry it through.
Mm. I would say, I think this may actually be the closest that we've come to disagreeing on something so far with the podcast. Because you were saying, what you're implying there is basically you tolerated his voice because the tunes were good.
Yes.
I actually enjoyed his voice as part of the songs.
Yes.
So what I agree with your broad sense that he's a better songwriter than he is a singer.
Yes.
That's true, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I did feel that, for the most part, I'd say about 80% of this album, I really enjoyed his voice. As just in the context of the songs.
Yes. With me, with the last song on the album, Buckets of Rain, is the one song where he really appears to be going out of his way not to extend beyond his vocal range.
Mm.
And his voice has a lovely tone at that point.
It does. It edges ever so slightly into the drony.
Mm.
Which I'm not saying this is a criticism, because God knows, I've listened to a lot of drony vocalists and drony musicians in the past and thoroughly enjoyed them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you did an entire album of that, it would get pretty weary pretty quickly.
It
runs the gamut of Americana.
Yes.
Really, because it you pointed out one track as being a bit of a 12-bar blues thing, which it very much was, and that was a corker of a track.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's the couple that are straight off country. And there's a lot that just kind of play around with the kind of American song stylings. I mean, what this was 75?
It was 1975.
When this was recorded?
Yeah.
And so a lot of the kind of the American folk... I don't know if this was around about... I think this was after the point where he pissed off a lot of the American folk, strokey, beardy, people by going electric. Because there was that story that actually, while we're listening to it, I mentioned it to John, who hadn't heard of this before, but it was a live performance soon after Dylan had made the transition from acoustic to electric, where some earnest bearded gent climbed up on stage with an axe and chopped his cables. Because he was so disgusted at the traitorous decision to go electric.
To abandon the saintly acoustic.
I know, it's frankly baffling.
It is.
Although, actually, no, maybe not so much when, you know, it's not that many years ago since Dimebag Darrell was shot on stage for leaving Pantera, basically.
Yeah.
Maybe we've not come along that far since those days.
And it's interesting as well, because I think the thing with Dylan is that the quality of the songwriting is the same.
Mm.
Not having listened to a great deal of Dylan prior to this afternoon. But if the quality of the songwriting is consistent, then that's what you're buying into. It's not you're not just buying into the sound of the acoustic guitar, of which there is plenty.
Oh, God, yeah. There's all kinds of acoustic instrumentation in there. It's definitely not a purely electric album. I mean, there's some electric instrumentation going on that album. There's an awful lot of acoustic as well. But what grabbed me a lot, which I was bending John's ear about at length whilst we're listening to it, is the very nature of alt country.
Yes.
Which is something I've enjoyed a lot. I mean, I love bands like Handsome Family and Calexico and Giant Sand, who we went to see at ATP. And I know some people credit Giant Sand with kind of kickstarting the alt country movement. Others and have kind of wound it back even further to the 1972 release of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's Will the Circle Be Unbroken?
Yeah.
Which is an absolutely stunning album. Anyone who's at all into country music needs to listen to that album.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's just all of the country royalty gathering together and making something wonderful that doesn't, that is pure country but feels just a little bit different at the same time. It's a little bit thrown together, it's a little bit odd, and definitely kind of lays down some of the building blocks of what would become alt country.
Yeah.
So while it's not an alt country album in itself, you can feel it's the movement starting there.
There's an edge to it.
And you can feel it in Blood on the Tracks.
Yes.
Definitely. Because there's a couple of tracks that are really thoroughly country.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of tracks that aren't, but still the touch of country has been laid upon. The fingerprints of country are all over their belongings.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, well, it's like you said while we were listening to it, this album does seem to straddle a lot of genres.
Within the kind of Americana blueprint.
Yeah.
Which Americana is in many, I can often regard that term as being like country music for people who don't want to admit they like country music. which actually then leads me to the comparison that I would make to Blood on the Tracks would be a couple of albums by Bright Eyes. Because I know you, I've said in the past, you do not like country music.
Yes.
But you do like Bright Eyes.
Yes.
Who I regard as not straight country.
No.
But definitely the DNA of country is just all over, it's riddled with country.
Yeah.
Those albums. But specifically like Casadega and Wide Awake It's Morning.
Yeah.
I got the feel of those albums whilst listening to Blood on the Tracks.
Yeah, I definitely say that there's some echoes of this that you can hear in Casadega. And there's the tone and delivery of some of the lyrics.
Mm.
Is similar.
I mean, we've got two men who write cracking lyrics and great tunes and are actually not very good singers.
Yes.
Because Connor ain't got no pretty voice.
Although
he refers to it directly in Wide Awake It's Morning, isn't he?
What's the lyric?
It's in Road to Joy. Okay. I could have been a famous singer if I had someone else's voice.
I think
that was the lyric.
Yeah, that's right. It's funny as well because, I mean, you could argue that Conor Oberst's voice has improved significantly between Lifted and The People's Key, and also across his two solo records.
Back in the kind of the Fevers and Mirrors and Lifted days, and of course the earlier releases than that,
Letting Off the Happiness,
really raw vocals. So he sometimes make a point of pushing himself past this comfortable range.
Yes,
just so you could hear that.
Because
really raw sounds to his voice.
I think Conor Oberst communicates far more viscerally than Bob Dylan does.
That's fair.
That's quite evident. But there is something in the way that he's singing these songs on Blood on the Tracks that it did put me in mind of listening to Bright Eyes albums.
Mm.
And so it's quite funny, from having listened to Bright Eyes since about 2005...
Something like that.
Around about there.
that one time that I put Lifted on the shop stereo and pretty much everyone disappeared off the shop floor. All the customers buggered off out of the shop and all the staff went into the back room.
Yeah.
And just me stood there going, I love this.
This is brilliant.
That was a great day.
When I first started properly listening to Bright Eyes, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but I was working in a different music zone and I started digging the albums out. I was working in this store that I didn't like. Wasn't happy there at all, and I was just stuck in the stock room upstairs booking on deliveries all the time, and that's when I started listening to Bright Eyes properly.
That is actually probably the perfect conditions to listen to Lifted.
That's when it really spoke to me. And so
when you're on your own, everything's shit. You put on Lifted and you go, you know what, Connor, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it.
Yeah. We are resonating on the same frequency. But as I started to listen to Bright Eyes, as I was reading around the band and the project and everything else, all that I kept seeing in like news blog posts and all that kind of thing, there were constant comparisons to Dylan.
Mm.
And it came up in nearly everything I read at the time.
It really did. And I had the same experience, mostly prior to the release of I'm Wide Awake This Morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't get it, because partly because my knowledge of Dylan was fairly limited, as I'm sure yours was as well.
Same.
But listening to Blood on the Tracks, it's like, hello. Yeah, I mean, that could have been a Bright Eyes album. Had we replaced, you know, had we basically lifted Dylan out and put Conor Oberst in, singing the same lyrics.
Could have done it.
I could have heard that as a Bright Eyes album, easily. Yes. With the same instrumentation and everything.
Yeah, because, I mean, the instrumentation that's on Blood on the Tracks, as we said before, is very crisp, it's very competent. Everyone's playing with each other instead of against each other.
And it's inventive as well. It broadens its scope from outside of simple country music.
Yeah,
you know, it has a bit of a mess around. And I can feel we can say that. I mean, with our Miles Davis top 100, we were on a little bit of shaky ground because we're not jazz experts.
No,
in the least. When we've experienced, like, talk about Max Geldrey.
Yes.
And my dad is a huge fan of, like, Dave Brubeck and things like that, so I've heard a lot through him. And of course, we saw Alan Wilkinson quartets and such like at ATP. But that does not a jazz expert make.
No.
However, this field, the Bob Dylan field, the male singer songwriter field, that's something we're a lot more comfortable in.
Yes.
So we know a bit more whereof we speak.
So
we can appreciate. It is inventive.
Yeah.
He was having fun with the genre he was working within.
Yes.
Especially, you know, after leaving the kind of acoustic world for the electric and pissing off a lot of people while he was doing it.
But as well as that, it's a very focused album because even though he's very evidently sort of playing in this field of music, it doesn't feel disorganised. It doesn't feel like anyone's winging it. There's a lot of drive behind this album, and there's a lot of purpose, and
I can see what you're building up to, John.
You can, because
it's very different to
Astral Weeks,
which was rubbish. Is anyone who listened to our previous Rolling Stone Top 100 episode about Van Morrison's Astral Weeks, well, no, we absolutely despised that album for a lot of the same reasons.
That we love this one.
Yeah.
Everything that's right about Blood on the Tracks is the exact opposite of what's happened on Astral Weeks.
Yeah.
Because it was sloppy. The musicians felt like they were playing against one another.
Mm.
There was no cohesion to it, and Van Morrison is just singing away all over it. I mean, this isn't going to be the focal point of every episode that we make.
we're not going to be comparing everything to Astral. Although we might. That might be our shtick. We don't know what's going to happen in the future.
It could be. I mean, it's a very low benchmark to discuss. But
two things I will just quickly say on that point. Firstly, to draw closer comparisons, we're talking about two vocalists that we're not 100% enamoured with.
No.
Although on Blood of the Tracks, for the most part, Bob Dylan is working within his means and with his musicians and making good songs that include his voice.
Yes.
Without everything feeling too strident and too desperate.
Yeah.
Whereas Van Morrison, everything's sort of like a bloody challenge. Yeah. Like he's throwing down this kind of vocal gauntlet to everyone. Like, hey, it's me voice! Work with that, you bastards. The time has gone off. I'm going to pub.
Whereas Van Morrison just sitting in the pub and the barman's going, how's the album going? I don't know. They're all fucking doing it in the studio in there.
But my other point as well is something that I felt that Blood on the Tracks suffered from, which Astral Weeks actually gained from, was the producer suddenly going, that's enough of that, and fading out suddenly.
Yeah.
There were a couple of tracks on Blood on the Tracks that just kind of went, boo, no more songs for you.
Yeah, there were a couple of sort of very quizzical fade outs.
Yeah, just sudden.
I would have queried one or two of them just like, and there's maybe a couple of tracks that might have benefited from fading out earlier.
There was one, the one that was 8 minutes long. But yeah, you could have trimmed the last couple of minutes off.
Yeah.
And everything, no one would have known any different.
No one would have been any the worse off for it.
But also, unlike the 9 minute song on Astral Weeks, I didn't feel like I was praying for the mercy release of death for that track.
You didn't feel like you were trudging through the songs so much as, oh, was that 8 minutes? Oh, crap.
Yeah. I think there was one point where I was thinking, this has been going on for a while.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, oh, God, this has been going on for a while. It was a different kind of, I just recognise the fact that this is quite a long song.
The one last point I really want to make, I think, is before we listened to it, I mentioned that Jeff Buckley had covered a song from this album.
Yes.
And
how did you get on with that song, John?
The song is If You See Her, Say Hello. And interesting. I far, far prefer Jeff Buckley's rendition of that song.
That does not astonish me, John.
His performance of it is beautiful, and it makes it a very bittersweet song about somebody knowing that he's passing through a town that a previous love lives in.
Mm.
And there's something really quite sad about saying to somebody, if you see such and such, just, you know, tell her I said hi, you know, and wanting to be remembered to somebody.
Mm.
There was something really bittersweet about the performance of that song from Jeff Buckley, and I didn't quite get that from the original version. But then Jeff Buckley had an amazing knack for recording songs by established artists and taking them into whole new heights of emotions.
Shall we address the Hallelujah elephant in the room?
Because,
oh, let's be honest, there's been so many versions of that song, and there's only one that I can even tolerate.
Yes.
And that is Jeff Buckley's. And I'm including the original, I'm sorry, Leonard Cohen fans.
Yeah.
I find the original turgid beyond belief.
I found Leonard Cohen's, the original version of that song, very difficult to listen to.
I mean, I don't know if there's any Leonard Cohen on the top 100. I'd be astonished if there weren't.
Yes.
So we may end up addressing some Cohen at some point.
I think that would be a nice thing to do.
But yeah, the original version of Hallelujah is almost by virtue of being the original, is my second favourite. But that's partly because practically every other version has just bored me to tears.
Yeah.
To Van Morrison levels of tears. The Rufus Wainwright one's all right, but it's kind of like Jeff Buckley light.
It is.
It's just like, yeah, yes, Jeff's already done this one, Ruf, so, you know, back off.
It's one of those, Jeff Buckley's Hallelujah is one of those versions where it doesn't need to be covered again.
It doesn't.
It's been locked down.
The optimum version has been locked down. Unless you're going to make some kind of Gabba Techno remix version, you know, to be a completely different version is what I'm getting.
I would be really curious to hear that.
Yes! So would I, actually. Yeah. Listeners at home, if you want to make a Gabba Techno remix version of Hallelujah, then tweet it to AYP Podcast.
And we will broadcast the shit out of it.
All of the shit.
Yes. I've never warmed to Rufus Wainwright's version of that song at all, because Jeff Buckley's version was just there.
The two were very similar kind of musically, but Jeff's just felt more, chutzpah again.
He's got the most amazing vocal delivery.
Yes. There's a tenderness and a real open, bleeding wound quality to it. You know, it's a raw quality. I use the word raw a lot in these podcasts, yeah. I realise. Almost as much as Gordon Ramsay does in Hell's Kitchen, which I watch an awful lot of. I'm sorry about that. But yeah, there is a rawness to Jeff Buckley's delivery. And a tenderness.
Yes. He's got a very powerful delivery, and it's something that I was hugely affected by when I first heard it. Much to our old manager's chagrin.
Chagrin?
Chagrin.
Chutzpah?
Because Because I
used you did like to put Grace on the stereo.
I listened to
quite
Grace
a lot,
punishingly, and I'm afraid I slightly ruined his enthusiasm for it.
But Craig, if you're listening, John apologises.
I do. But I had never heard anything like it.
Yeah, fair play. But once again, we're straying away. We've discussed Bright Eyes and Leonard Cohen and Jeff Buckley. And Van Morrison.
Discussed everything around Bob Dylan.
But I think, shall we just tie it off as just saying that Blood on the Tracks by Bob Dylan.
Yes.
You enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it to a surprising degree. I think that we're even inside the possibility that we might not enjoy it at all.
Yeah. Yes.
Thanks, Van Morrison. but you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, well done, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah. And that's all needs to be said on that. So, yeah, thanks for listening.
Thank you. I've managed to get through all the way through this without comparing myself to him as well.
You kind of like the Bob Dylan of podcasters.
Very understated. But also very wonky.
Yeah.
Cheerio.
You have been listening to All Yesterday's Parties.
Just like Bob Dylan does.
Just like Bob Dylan does. And the music is by Attack of the Vapors, and the podcast is hosted by Audio Boom.
Boom!